తతో మా సద్గమయ తమసో మా జ్యోతిర్గమయ మృత్యోర్మా అమృతంగమయ ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి. లార్డ్, లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ ది అన్రియల్ టు ది రియల్, లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ ఇగ్నోరెన్స్ టు ఇల్యూమినేషన్, లీడ్ అస్ ఫ్రమ్ డెత్ టు ఇమ్మార్టాలిటీ. ఓం పీస్ 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 బి అంటూ ఆల్. We have been discussing spiritual progress. So far we have discussed the systematic training to be gained through the following of Patanjali's yoga system. Patanjali had delineated 8 steps, and the very first of these 2 steps is to get rid of all the obstacles and to direct our mind in the proper direction. We had already discussed about it. The third step is asana. Asana means posture. Asana also means the seat on which we sit. This appears to be a very trivial thing. What has sitting to do with spiritual progress? Spirituality is not something that we try to gain in a corner of the shrine room or at the time of meditation. Spirituality is an outlook which we develop and through which our whole life is directed. Observe a person sitting or standing. Asana, as I said, literal meaning is sitting, posture. Also the seat on which he sits. It doesn't mean merely how a person sits. It means what is the body doing. Is it in a restless movement? The bodily movement and the movement of the mind are interrelated. If the body is moving, that means the mind is moving. If the mind is moving, the body cannot keep quiet. I have seen people, and you can also see, there is nothing yogic vision in this. Just sit behind the shrine, go on observing people sitting there. Some people sit absolutely like stones. See, what can be done? His mind is moving inside. So somehow the movement has got to be come out to express itself. Standing or doing any other work, some movement is necessary while performing some type of duties. But how much is necessary? The ability to use only that much of energy which is needed to discharge properly a particular type of work. That is part of spiritual progress. People, as we have discussed many times, often come and ask, why is it that I am not able to concentrate my mind? And of course, there is no point in discussing deeper things. I tell them that have faith in God and go on repeating the name of Him, do japa, and you will progress. But later on perhaps I will tell him, why don't you try to sit a bit quietly? Now why do I say to them that go on taking the name of God instead of straight saying that why don't you, you know, when somebody talks too much, we say shut up. Is there any word which is appropriate to say, keep your body quiet in that sense. Shut your body. Keep it quiet. Why don't you sit quiet? Why are you always in a restless movement? Also you will notice, if a person is excessively restless, he will make other people also restless. In their presence, their influence is so great, that you also feel restless. Have you not observed this? You become really uneasy. You don't feel at ease. You feel like running away from the place. While talking, it's wonderful. Talking is very necessary. But how much to talk? How to talk? There is also a restlessness of the movement there. In this way, whatever action we are doing, there is an excessive movement which is detrimental to spiritual progress. Asana means that capacity only to use the movement of the body to that extent which serves its purpose. That is the real meaning of asana. How to achieve it? There is no easy way. One easy way is inject anesthesia into him, but that doesn't serve the purpose. The other way is go on practicing. How long? Yesterday somebody asked me, how long should we go on practicing spiritual disciplines? He said, do you want me to fix a date and a time when God is going to come and meet you? That's the right answer would be, supposing that person has come from Brighton. Suppose you started from Brighton to Vedanta Center. Would you just ask a stranger, how long will it take for me to go to Vedanta Center? The counter question would be, by what means are you traveling? Are you flying? Are you going by a car? By a bicycle? Walk? Or are you crawling? In spiritual life, and it's a journey, we don't even qualify to say that we are walking. Probably we are crawling. How long does it take if you start crawling from Brighton to here? Spiritual progress cannot be measured in this materialistic manner. But Patanjali himself raises the question, when does the man reach the goal? Tivra samveganam asannaha. Goal is reached proportionate to your longing to realize the goal. How much longing have you to reach the goal? That's the real test. So the third step is asana. But certain hints are given how to become a little better at practicing this asana. Sthiram sukham asanam. Posture is that which makes you happy. There is a type of posture, and sometimes some people unaccustomed to Hindu ways of doing, they think a yogi always should sit with crossed legs, with contortions and all that. And the result would be they won't get good sleep at night. That posture, which makes your body as though you don't feel it, you should not feel the pinch of the body. That is the right posture. Of course, if you lie down on a nice bed, it doesn't pinch you. Is that a good posture? It's called Shavasana. Wonderful name. That is the posture most appropriate to dead people. Shava means a corpse. Don't practice Shavasana. You will become a Shava in course of time. That posture, which makes the body, which takes away consciousness of the body from your mind, where you feel the least consciousness of the body, that is called a real posture. But at the same time, the neck, head and the back should be straight. Why should it be straight? Very simple, physiologically. You see, the body is meant to be kept in a certain position to function at the most appropriate level, optimum level. And there is a balance of gravity. If you lean too much forward, then pain starts. If you lean backward, pain starts. Just sit and find out that with, even on the chair, that where you don't feel, it's perfectly balanced. The gravity takes over the burden of the body. The body becomes free. That is the right posture. relaxed, that which makes you relaxed. Certain postures make you stiff. Certain postures help us to relax. Very easy to find out which posture helps us to relax. Of course, here relaxation has to be understood in a spiritual way. If you lie down in an easy chair after hard work, it will relax you very nicely. But too much, you will not be able to meditate. You will have what we call nidra samadhi. That's not the purpose. Here to make the mind alert. That is the asana. How Sri Ramakrishna used to practice his sitting posture. You know, body gets restless. How to make it absolutely still? Stillness. He used to show one of the images on the temple of Mother Kali. One of the images is called Bhairava. Bhairava is supposed to be an attendant of the Divine Mother. There is an image on the temple parapet. Sri Ramakrishna used to see that image from where he was sitting and tell to his mind, you must sit as still as that image of Bhairava. This was just a kind of help to us. Observe the posture of Buddha. What serenity and peace and calmness just flows. Just look at his image, absolutely still. Look at the image of Shiva in meditation. That's a wonderful help for us. So these are some of the helps. But Patanjali goes further. Our problem is our mind is restless. We want to control it and make it restful, steady. One of the aids given is, try to think of infinity. Where do you get infinity in this world? The infinite sky. It's not really infinite, but comparatively it is infinite. Or sit on the shores of an ocean and go on looking at it. Or go to a desert and go on looking at it. These vast spaces, a sense of vastness that steadies the mind. It's a marvelous tonic. So it is advocated that before starting meditation or concentration, one should recall to one's mind a most beautiful scenery. And if you can keep your mind, visualize a beautiful scenery, it helps a great lot to bring the mind under control. The body also comes under control. Because this body is physical and gross, it is easier to start with this body than with the control of the mind. Slowly, that which is easier, we must start. Take easy steps, easy exercises. So, we must practice whenever we sit for meditation or concentration. Let us observe how our body is sitting. Is it sitting steadily without too much of movements? And if we are not able to sit, let us first practice that. Concentration will come later on. It is also necessary not only at the time of meditation, as we just now discussed, while doing any type of activity, whether it is cooking or office work, whatever it is, how much energy we are expending, how much movement of the body is we are expressing, slowly that should be brought under control, and that is part of spiritual progress. The ability to sit steadily, still, relaxed, that is part of spiritual progress. Then comes pranayama. That is the fourth step in the scheme of Patanjali. Pranayama means control of the psychic energy. Prana is a psychic energy. All our thoughts, all our bodily movements, all the functions of the sense organs, these are all originating from this energy. These are all expressions of the energy. life force. The source is one. So by controlling this energy, we will be able to still the mind. And in the stillness of the mind, the reflection of the consciousness can be clearly perceived. How to still the psychic energy? So, what is it that expresses in the most visible manner? What is the expression of the psychic energy? Breath. That's why breath also is called prana. Breath is really prana. Stop breathing for 5 minutes. What happens? You know what happens. So breath is prana. Breath is intimately connected with the movement of the mind. In the bodily movement itself is connected with the mind, as we said. But in the bodily movement, it is the breath which is very, very important. This is everybody's experience. You get agitated, your breath comes out very, very quickly. You become dull. You know what is dullness? It's a kind of concentration. The energy is not being expressed. A long breath, have you noticed that? So control of breath slowly would give us the control of the mind. That is why in the Buddhistic Vipassana meditation, breath observation has been given so much of importance. Go on observing the breathing process, how the air is going out, how it is coming in. You may wonder, how does it help us to progress spiritually? First of all, observing the breath without allowing any other thoughts to intrude itself is a great practice exercise in concentration. Now, if you want to find out, there is a simple test. For 10 counts, go on observing your breath without thinking anything else, just observing the breath. And if you fail, start counting again from number 1. Let me see how many times you will have to do before you can say that yes, at least once for 10 counts I have been able to concentrate my mind on this particular. But more than this, observing the flow of the breath stills the mind. Observing the breath of the breath also gives us the ability of observing everything carefully. So the next step would be observing the thoughts that are floating in our mind. Human being has an extraordinary capacity to get out of himself, as it were, stand aside and look at himself objectively. One can observe. That's why we use very often the expressions, I am angry, I am happy, I know myself. As it were, whether you are standing aside and observing, this person is very happy, this person is very angry, this person, I know this person very well. As though we are a different person, but at times we merge together. This capacity is a wonderful capacity. We do not know whether animals have this capacity, but only human beings seem to have this capacity. Observing or witnessing is a wonderful process whereby we are, as it were, becoming an object of our own mind, part of our mind, as it were, is separating from itself and observing it. And if we can do it, that is part of spiritual progress. So this controlling the breath is not merely blowing the air in and out. We are also asked in pranayama, count, for example, 4, 8, 16. Breathe into 4 counts and retain the breath for 8 counts and just throw it out in 16 counts. Our outgoing breath is always longer than our ingoing breath. Now, why are we asked to count this? Because counting itself
is a process of concentration. So the breathing, control of the breathing is called pranayama. It is not called controlling of the breathing, as I said. Breathing is prana. So controlling of the breathing ultimately leads us to the control of the prana or energy. And because that energy also animates the mind, ultimately it gives us control over the mind. So this, there are three processes in this. Intake of the breath, retaining of the breath, and throwing out of the breath. A spiritual person is not necessarily asked to control this breathing too much. But what is important is, the breath should be deep and slow and rhythmic. Deep and slow and rhythmic. If we can do that, that will help us a great lot. So the people who complain that we do not have concentration of mind, let them do this. Let them go on breathing deeply, slowly, and rhythmically. Sometimes there are other aids which allow us to practice the same thing without too much of strain. One of those techniques is repetition of God's name rhythmically. For example, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. There is a rhythm there. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. If a person does it for a long time, there comes a kind of rhythm. Rhythm gives us the ability to breathe deeply and to the time and slowly, and it quietens the mind. This is the secret why music, by music I mean real music, I don't mean metal and rock and soft gig or rigger, huh? Reggae. Reggae. Soft reggae and hard reggae and all that. I don't mean, that's not music. That is terrible. That is yama. It makes a person, even a dead person, feels like running, run away from the place. Makes person violent. A spiritual person becomes unspiritual by that. God himself runs away from that person. Music, real music, which has that maturity of the voice and rhythm. You know, very interesting thing. Sri Ramakrishna was a great musician. He had a wonderful aesthetic sense. The important thing in music is not the noise that is being made, but an aesthetic sense. It's an art. If that artistic element is missing, and by that I do not mean only the person who is singing, but that I mean the persons who are also listening. They can be also artists if they have that aesthetic sense. Many people, to my great regret, have no aesthetic sense. For example, I give you one example. Once I went to a concert. Beautiful singer. Beautiful tabla accompaniment is there. And everything is nice. So the person's two microphones were provided and the singer was singing and the tabla man was playing his accompaniment. Perfect. So far as noise is concerned, a perfect noise. The singer's voice was coming out in a very soft way and the tabla was just taking the roof off. Where is the aesthetic sense there? Here the most important person is the singer. The accompaniment is supposed to be the accompaniment. If the dog is leading you, taking you for a walk, you cannot claim that you are taking the dog for a walk. I am surprised how this aesthetic sense is lacking. Sri Ramakrishna had a very highly sensitive aesthetic sense. He used to, real music used to throw him into samadhi. But let there be a kind of unrhythm, disharmony. Instantaneously he will come down from his samadhi and it becomes disturbed by his samadhi. We discovered it too late, otherwise it would have been very easy to bring him down from samadhi. He used to get annoyed and say, "You are disturbing my mind. It would have been better if the person had not sung." He was very particular that there must be harmony, there must be rhythm in that music. So when we hear such music, immediately it makes us calm and quiet and it throws us into a serene state. Music is a very, very powerful sense. There is no other sense which can bring a man's mind under control like music. Among the sight, the taste, the touch, the smell, they don't bring. But let a person hear beautiful, rhythmic, wonderful music. Instantaneously the mind can become calm and quiet. It can even attain to a very high state of spirituality, temporarily. But it is equally dangerous because we are rousing the emotion, as it were, through this force of this music. And the emotion which is not controlled but roused, it could lead to very dangerous results. But our point here is, pranayama is our control of the breath can be also achieved by the repetition of God's name in a rhythmic manner. Now we will do in japa, we are liable to get tired if we don't do it in a rhythmic manner. So this is a wonderful aid. Try to put your mantra into a rhythmic manner. You will see after some time the mantra is going on as it were on its own and you are just sitting on it and it is pulling you. Try it and you will understand what I am saying. In the Patanjali scheme of things, pranayama has not been given a great importance because these are all external aids. It is all right to take its help to some extent, but we should not pull it too much. If you do too much of pranayama, not only doesn't make you control your mind, it becomes yama, pranayama. Yama means death. In any case, it can lead to diseases, even good diseases. You know what is a good disease? Let me give you a real incident from the life of a saint, a South Indian saint. Have you heard about Swami Ramdas, Anandashrama? At one time, he took up this pranayama and he was very enthusiastic. Whatever he takes up, he sees it through the end. He sees it through. He has the tremendous perseverance. So he started doing it 6 hours, 8 hours every day. Now he was living in a hut. He used to go for his food to some devotee's house. One day morning, after the practice of this, he went early in the morning and the lady was very great devotee. She gave masala dosha. That's why I call her good devotee. Not such good devotees, you know. They just give plain dosha, which has no taste and other things. Good devotees always know what to give to swamis and holy people. She gave this masala dosha. He ate 2 or 3 and started coming back to his cottage. By the time he reached the cottage, he was ravenously hungry. A masala dosha is a special type of dish. Even if you take one, it fills your stomach. This man had 2 or 3. And he just walked 1 mile and the whole thing was digested in no time. He was telling he had to run back to that center. He was so hungry. He went there. The lady was surprised because he never came like this before second time. So the good lady prepared another 2-3 and gave him. And he ate and again came back. By the time he reached the hut, he had to run back again. After the third time he said, "Enough of pranayama, we don't want to do any more because that poor lady, she may give up her heart." He continues, this is called good disease, I call it good disease. Pranayama is very helpful in spiritual progress and In our mission, we don't give too much of importance, accepting rhythmic breathing, deep, slow rhythmic breathing, and observing the breathing before sitting for meditation is a wonderful help, but beyond that, we do not pay that much of attention. Pratyahara is the fifth step. Pratyahara means the ability to withdraw the mind. How important this pratyahara is in our day-to-day life, not to speak of in spiritual life, even in our worldly life. You want to go to sleep, you are tired, suddenly a worrying thought enters into your mind like a bug, and these bugs are self-breeding bugs. They go on breeding other thoughts, you know, they don't come single, they come with so many other things, pull so their relatives, 14 generation relatives. And your sleep is gone. And you are worried that you are worried, and your sleep is more lost. The more you worry, the more your sleep is gone. You want to sleep, your body is crying, and your sleep is gone. And you are worried that you are worried, and your sleep is more lost. The more you worry, the more your sleep is gone. You want to sleep, your body is crying for rest. Many things, while eating food, while doing work, any negative thought that catches hold of us. If only we had the ability to say to the, get out, I have other things to do. If we have that capacity, how wonderful it would be. You can sleep when you want to sleep. Now, are there people who have this capacity? We know that every saint, every spiritual aspirant, if he has practiced sufficiently, he has the capacity. But even ordinary people, for example, Napoleon, I heard about Napoleon. His tremendous ability of this pratyahara. He was in the battlefield and he was planning something. Suddenly the messenger comes with some bad news. And Napoleon says, okay, now you can go, I heard about it. As it were, he opens his mind. His mind is like a drawer, and the table has got so many drawers. And as it were, he pulls out one drawer and says, this matter is to be dealt after 2 hours. Puts that paper, means that thought, and closes it. Finished. He doesn't think twice about it. Then he deals with other matters. And after 2 hours, he says, okay, what is it that this message means, what should I do, how should I react? He was a person who was able to sleep at any time. You know, his own prime minister was his deadliest enemy. And that man was always plotting against Napoleon, I heard. But Napoleon could not do away with him because he was so intelligent, indispensable. So sometimes Napoleon was dead tired, he wanted to sleep. So he will call this man into his room. What was his name? Anyway, he used to call this man and discuss important things, then say, look here, I am tired, I am going to sleep. Knowing fully well that man is waiting for an opportunity to stab him. But he is not worried. Just simply he will go, I want to sleep, and he sleeps. He could sleep on horseback. 6-7 hours he was riding the horse in the battlefield, directing his armies. And he needs rest. He's also a man like us. So on the horse, for 2-3 minutes, he will just make his horse stand, and while sitting in that sitting posture, and he goes deep sleep for 2-3 minutes, and he gets some ability to deal with things. Then again he rides for some time. This way, he could withdraw his mind. Mahatma Gandhi had that power, tremendous power. He used to get up early in the morning at 3 o'clock. Then he used to go to his important meetings with the governor general or whatever it is. And he would sit in a car. He would ask the driver, how much time will it take for me to reach that place? He says, say maybe 20 minutes. Okay, 20 minutes, I am going to sleep. The moment he said that, he is fast asleep. and exactly after 20 minutes, fresh, he is awake. That capacity to withdraw our mind from thoughts which we do not want to entertain, that is called pratyahara. It is a very useful practice even in our worldly life. Then we would be much less worried about things. But for spiritual people, it's much more important. Why? Because concentration on a particular object depends upon our capacity of withdrawal. Our inability to concentrate on any object itself means that our mind is distracted by other thoughts. What type of thoughts? Are they very important thoughts? Are they thoughts of life and death question? No. Very trivial thoughts, stupid thoughts, useless thoughts. The greatest obstruction to spiritual life is not deadly thoughts, but trivial thoughts. Suddenly we remember lot of trivial things. Oh, I have not kept my toothbrush in the right place, I think. And that 5 minutes gone in meditation. What does it matter if it is not in the right place? Even if it is not in the right place for 1 year, it is not going to complain. You are complaining. These trivialities are the greatest distractions. Our time is eaten up by small lot of trivial things, and not that a great inimical thought is coming and possessing you and doing things. No. It's most of the time it is the trivial things that are the obstructions. So pratyahara, how do we practice it? Can we withdraw our mind? You see, often we use the negative method, which is self-defeating. No, I don't want to think about it. And you are only thinking about it much more deeply. Did I tell you the story? In America, once an advertisement came out. If you send me $5, I will send you a technique by which you can convert metals into gold. Many people, you may think that people are not fools, but there are many fools in this world. As some American says, every minute 11,000 suckers are born. Have you heard about it? Anyway, this many people sent the money, and promptly that man had sent the technique. He said, very simple, take a tumbler full of water, whatever metal you want to convert into gold, put it on that, and just for 3 minutes, concentrate on that metal, thinking that it is converting slowly into gold. And at the end of 3 minutes, if you don't see the gold, then I will give you $100 back. Most wonderful, isn't it? But in the bottom, he has written in big letters, but mind you, don't think of a monkey. Caution, don't think of a monkey. Now you can imagine, nobody succeeded. Everybody was busy, how to not think of a monkey. Pratyahara, I do not want to think about this. That's not going to work out. It's a negative method. You are only reinforcing that particular thought. What is the technique then? Think of something which interests you. The way to withdraw the mind from unwanted, undesirable thought is to replace it with a thought which we would like to think about it. Take the name of God. Take some good idea and go on thinking about it. That's the only way. There is no other way. And practice on this is very important. This pratyahara and the next step, dharana, means the ability to fix the mind on what we would like to think about. These two almost go together. There are some people who advocate that pratyahara, or withdrawal of the mind, is possible and is important. These are the advocates of what we call make the mind blank. Is it possible to make the mind blank? And supposing you succeed in making the mind blank, what will you become? Whatever you think you become. You think of worldly things, you become a worldly person. You think of blankness, what will you become? Blankness, that's all. Do you want to become blank? That's not the aim of spiritual practice. It is to become something which is real. Blank is unreal. So yoga doesn't believe in making the mind blank. It believes in making the mind absolutely still. Stillness and blankness are often confused together. Blankness means a dead man has mind is absolutely blank. But a yogi's mind is not blank, but it is still. It is still with the thought of Atman or Purusha or the soul or God. That is our aim. So dharana, or the ability to fix the mind to think whatever we would like to think upon, that is the sixth step. And then only comes the question of dhyana, meditation or samadhi, which are so high. People's question always, you know, like this man in Holland, I can control my Sahasrara chakra, but please tell me how to control my Mooladhara chakra. He can control Sahasrara, but he can't control his Mooladhara. Sri Ramakrishna used to practice meditation. In the beginning he had to struggle a lot. So you know what technique he employed? He made part of his mind a watchman, and a terrible watchman. He created out of his own mind a terrible watchman, a man with a trident. And that man, it was so real, that visualization was so real, that when Sri Ramakrishna used to sit, this man used to appear before him, and he used to tell, look here, if you think of anything else, I will pierce you with this trident. There was no outsider. He conditioned his mind to create that watchman. We can also create a watchman out of ourselves if we practice enough. I should not think anything else excepting holy thoughts. If we make our mind strong in this respect, whenever an undesirable thought comes, through the practice, earlier practice, this cautioning power assumes a realistic proportion, a realistic form, and helps us a great deal. Though those who have got the power of visualization, they are blessed in many ways. Of course, these mad people also have got the power of visualization. They hallucinate ghosts and spirits, even God himself coming and whispering into their ears, kill this man. That's not whatever, the power is there, but it is misused power. Spiritual people also must develop that power of visualization, its most wonderful aid. But whether that visualization becomes a devil and kills us, or it becomes a god and saves us, that depends upon our practice of Yama and Niyama. That's why Yama and Niyama are so very important. My teacher, Swami Yatheeswaranandaji, he used to caution people, don't ever practice concentration until you have attained to some amount of purification of the mind. Because there are people in this world who have tremendous power of concentration, but not purification of the heart, and the result was they became devils. From our mythologies, you can take the examples of Ravanasura, Bhasmasura, Narakasura, all demons. What tremendous power they had. They did tremendous austerities, wrenched as it were bones from God. But in the end, they brought destruction to the world and to themselves. That's why they were called demons. In the modern demons, like Hitler, like Mussolini, they are not ordinary people. A tremendous power of concentration. Their thoughts were concentrated. But that concentration of hatred, of destruction, that's why they caused so much of havoc in this world. So if we increase our power of concentration by practice, forcible practice, but if we did not attain that purity of heart, Do you know what happens? All the demons that are within us, kama, krodha, loha, moha, mada, matsarya, lust, anger, greed, avarice, pride, all these things become very, very powerful. That's why a man with concentration, he could be damaged very quickly, very soon. He becomes like a madman. That is the right word, madness, with a particular idea. If the idea is God, then he becomes a God-man. If it is of the world, he becomes a madman. Both God-men and madmen are very near to each other. The similarities is in their power of concentration. But the dissimilarity is the thought that with which they have become mad. So concentration appears to be very rosy and very wonderful, and it's marvelous power. Swami Vivekananda had tremendous power of concentration. One or two examples are here. When he was a young man, he used to wander in India, and he used to take up the Encyclopedia of Britannica. In a few hours, he used to go through the whole thing, not flicking the pages, turning over pages, but absorbing all the matter there. Now, there was a librarian who lent these books to Swamiji, and he got suspicion. This man is only looking at some pictures and then returning back the books. So he expressed this, why should this man take, how can any man in this human being in this world take one volume of encyclopedia and return back after 1 hour saying, I have read it. Have you heard anything about it? Like this. Then Swamiji went to him and said, no, I have read the whole thing. You can test me. And that man started at random asking questions, what does this mean? Swamiji not only gave what was his understanding of that subject, but verbatim he started quoting from those pages. The librarian was astonished and said, it is a superhuman feat. It's not possible for a human being. Swamiji had that power. Interestingly, he came to London. He met Paul Deussen. I think it was in London or Germany, I don't remember. Paul Deussen was a great Oriental scholar. And he invited Swami Vivekananda to his house, and Swamiji saw very nice books. That man had wonderful collection of books in his library, and Swamiji was absorbed in reading one of the books. Paul Deussen went and then started conversation with Swamiji, wanted to start, but Swami Vivekananda was not giving any reply at all. 2-3 times this man had asked something, but there was no reply, and this politician got so annoyed and said, this man is insulting me by not replying to me. Swamiji was not at all aware of that. And when Swamiji had finished reading the book, and the politician told him, what is this, I wanted to talk to you. He said, oh, I'm sorry, I never heard what you are telling. He was standing by the side of Swamiji and loudly talking, and Swamiji was not aware at all of this. Later on, Paul Deussen understood the tremendous power of concentration that Swamiji had. There was also a funny incident that when Swamiji was in America, once he was invited to spend some summer holidays, Ridgely Manor. Swamiji went there. He stayed for a few days there. One day morning he went out. He saw his host's son was playing golf. Swamiji never saw this golf game before. And he asked, what is this? Oh, it's a golf game. Oh, what do you do? Oh, you take this ball and give it a beating, and it will be put into that hole. So the boy showed a hole at a distance and said, Swamiji asked him, how many times do you have to beat this ball so that it will land in the hole? He said, Swami, if somebody can do it in 5 or 6 strokes, then he would be considered as a good player. Swami said, what? 5-6 times? Can't you do it in 1 stroke? Boy said, impossible. And would you bet? How much would you bet if I put the ball in the hole? The boy took out from his pocket $0.50 and said, I have $0.50, Swami. I am betting you $0.50. Meanwhile, the boy's father, the host, had come. And he heard the conversation, And he also said, Swami, it is impossible for even the best player to put this ball in one stroke. Swamiji said, how much do you get? The man said, $10. Swamiji said, done. And he took this bat and gave one blow and it squarely landed in the hole. And the man started complaining, Swami, it's not fair. You used your yogic power to do it. Swami said, no, I haven't used any yogic power. It's just ordinary power. How did you do it? Swamiji smiled and said, very simple. I told to my mind, look here, mind, do you want $10.5? Then you better put this ball in the hole. And immediately the mind got very enthusiastic and then $10.5. Really, it is not a yogic power in the sense, it's not a miraculous power that Swamiji has used. His power of concentration was so great, whatever he says to his mind, it will immediately listen. Of course, that is yogic power, you can say. Another incident also was there. Once Swamiji was taking a stroll, suddenly he was passing through a bridge. And then he saw that it rained previously. There was a stream which became very volatile, and a lot of shells were floating, going downstream. And these cowboys, they were having some guns and having fun. How many of them could shoot those floating shells? Swamiji was observing them. Very few of them were able to really reach the target, strike the target. And Swamiji laughed out. And those fellows turned and said, what? Do you think that you can do better than us? Swami said, I can try. And one of the men handed over the gun to Swamiji and started shooting it. Each was a hit. Each shot was a hit. It was hitting the shell. And the cowboys were surprised. And they were more surprised when they came to learn that was the first time Swamiji was handling a gun. This is the power of concentration, power of mind. Mind has extraordinary powers. It has nothing to do with spirituality. But when these powers are directed towards God, then the man progresses in spiritual life. Anyway, to conclude our talk today, the point is the ability to withdraw the mind and the ability to fix it upon the object that we would like to fix upon. These are very important steps in spiritual progress. It need not be extraordinary things. It could be very ordinary things. You are reading a book. Concentrate on it. You are cooking. Concentrate on it. You are talking. Concentrate on it. You are listening. Concentrate on it. Make yourself a test now. You have been sitting here for almost an hour. And you have been... Have you been listening to me with concentration? Yes, in a general sense, yes. But how many times your mind has wandered already back to your homes, to your office, what you are going tomorrow and all those things? That is a very important practice. We think only practice of meditation in the meditation room. But if we do not have the ability to concentrate right what we are doing right now, we will not have that power in the shrine room or anywhere else. That's why Buddhists practice walking meditation, working meditation, sitting meditation. Anything that we do, we must be able to do it with concentration. Swami Vivekananda used to say, if a man can prepare a perfect hookah, you know, it's tobacco, smoking tobacco, is very special Indian and Muslim way of doing it. Very soon he will realize God. So start preparing hookahs. See how nicely you can do it. So this ability of concentration comes through practice. There is no easier way. If we are reading one page with concentration today, let's increase it tomorrow to two pages. Let us increase it day after tomorrow to three pages. listening when we are talking to our friends. Do we really listen to them? We are hearing them, but are we listening to them? It's like politicians talking too much without saying anything. We hear too much without listening anything. Really, listening is an art, and listening is a great healing process. If we can listen to somebody with concentration, with sympathy, then the other person gets healed a great lot. That's what psychologists are. You pay psychologists. If you come to me and talk 1 hour, I don't charge any money to you, but I am as well not listening to what you are saying. But if you pay £100 an hour, then the man makes you lie down and he listens with great care and slowly directs you to the source of your problem. He's just like a wonderful receiving machine. It is an art. The person who could develop that art, he would be a great healer. Even a doctor, a physician, a teacher. A teacher will be a better teacher if he listens to his students, not hearing, but listens to his students. How much greater usefulness it is in spiritual life. And according to the path of knowledge, Shravana, or listening to spiritual truths, is the very first step in spiritual progress. We are all reading books, we are all hearing spiritual things, but we are not progressing. What is happening? We are not really listening. We have not developed that. How do we know that we are listening? Because the effect would be tremendous. The listening, the concentration, it is to be judged by the effect, not by the act, but by the effect. Life itself will be transformed. So that is the sixth step. In our next class, we will discuss about the other two steps briefly and move on to other what the other teachers, other paths have got to say. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.